Just as I am without one plea.
Good morning from your friends and neighbors at the Rock Creek Church of Christ in Ottawa, Kansas. The Rock Creek Church of Christ is glad to share this program with you. We hope it will help you as you seek to know God and what His will is for your life. On our last program, we left off in James chapter 2. We were talking about how, in order for faith to be alive, it must have works. And James makes that point very clear in this second chapter. He talks about how even the demons believe in God and tremble, and yet demons do not have works that demonstrate that their faith is alive, that it's genuine. He talks about Abraham, who was declared to be righteous by virtue of his faith in Genesis chapter 15, did not see that faith come to its ultimate fulfillment until he offered Isaac his son on the altar in Genesis chapter 22. Many years had transpired between those two events. James says that that offering of Isaac, that was the ultimate demonstration of Abraham's faith. He was willing to put his faith into action. And when you look at the life of Abraham, you see Abraham had a faith that was alive. This is the man who was called to leave his family behind, to move his wife and all of his wealth down to a foreign land that he had never seen. And he did all this on the basis of his faith in God. This was a man who had a living faith. And then as James brings us to a close in verse 25. He talks about how Rahab the harlot, the woman who hid the spies in Jericho, who confessed her belief in the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, because of her faith, because she was willing to help the children of Israel conquer the city of Jericho, because of that faith, she and her household were rescued. And so he draws chapter 2 to a close with this statement, "For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead." I don't understand why James chapter 2 is so controversial. It just seems to make sense to me that if you have a faith that is alive, it's going to be demonstrated in the deeds and the actions that you carry out in your life. In Titus chapter 1, Paul is warning Titus about false teachers and false teaching, and he makes a very interesting statement at the end of that first chapter. He says in verse 16, "They profess to know God, but in works they deny him, being abominable, disobedient, and disqualified for every good work." That's such an interesting observation. They profess to know God, but in works they deny him. Their lips say, "Oh yes, I know God. Oh yes, I believe in God," but their lives do not reflect that profession. This is what James chapter 2 is urging us toward, a consistency with our faith, a consistency of living our faith out in our life. Because without those works, without those deeds, without those actions present, of what value is that faith? James says it is empty, it is meaningless, it is dead. We come into chapter number 3. And once again, James shifts gears. He says, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment." Teachers in the church are held to a higher standard. And the reason for that, I think, is obvious. A teacher carries with them the potential of misleading the student. And for that reason, God holds a teacher of the word to a higher standard. He expects more from them. And that's been a pretty consistent message down through the years. God always expects those who have a leadership role in the church. He always holds them to a higher set of expectations. I think of Moses, how he struck the rock and took credit for bringing water out of the rock for himself. And for that error, he was prevented from entering the land of Canaan. God let him look on the land of Canaan from a high mountain, but it was there that Moses died. He got to see the Canaan land, but he never got to enter the Canaan land with the rest of the Jewish people. God holds his leaders to higher standards, and that's true for teachers as well. You will be held to a stricter judgment. James uses this point as a springboard into talking about one of our most deadly weapons. And I'm not talking about atomic bombs. I'm not talking about a gun. I'm talking about our tongue. In verse number 2, he says, "For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body." The ability to control one's tongue is, in James' estimation, the greatest evidence of self-control. If you can control your tongue, then you can just about control anything in your life. The one who can control his tongue, James says, is a perfect man. And once again, we have to remind ourselves that perfection in this does not mean free from error. It simply means mature or complete. The one who is able to master his speech, to control his or her tongue, has arrived at a level of Christian maturity. And being able to control the tongue will translate in being able to control other parts, other aspects of one's life. As he says, you are able also to bridle the whole body. We all have desires, temptations that appeal to us. If we can control our speech, if that's something that we focus on, then that self-control we learn in controlling our speech will then translate into helping us in other areas, not allowing desire and temptation to lead us away. In verse number 3, he begins using a couple of metaphors. And the metaphors are intended to illustrate a very basic point. And that is, a small thing can control a large thing. Verse 3, "Indeed we put bits in horses' mouth, that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body." Now, I'm sure there are people out there listening to this program that are familiar with horses, that you perhaps own horses, you ride horses. I really know very little about this. I never had an interest in horses growing up and never really gained an interest since then. But as I understand, all that's required to control a horse is this small little bit that one places in their mouth. And with that bit, you're able to steer this very large animal. Now, I don't know how much those bits weigh, but relative to the horse, they are quite tiny. The horse is 1,500 pounds, I would guess on average, depending on the breed. I suppose they could be either bigger or smaller. But the point is, here you've got this very small thing that is able to turn this very large animal. That's the first metaphor. Verse number 4, he gives a second metaphor. Look at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Now, I know in some boats, you have a motor that will turn, so the propeller will turn in order to change direction for the boat. But in these larger ships, you actually have a rudder that will direct the boat one way or the other. And in reality, the rudder is really a better way to control the direction of a boat. James's point is, you have this very large ship whose direction is determined by this very small implement, this rudder. Even so, he says in verse 5, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Here is this little piece of flesh inside of our mouth. This little piece of flesh that enables us to articulate words, to express thoughts, to put ideas out there. And this tongue is able to set the course of our life in many ways. If we're able to control it, we can control other aspects of our life. And if we're not able to control it, what we will find is our life directed in ways that we might not necessarily want to go. How often does our tongue get us in trouble? Well, if we haven't learned the self-control that James is talking about here in chapter number 3, we know our tongue can get us in an immense amount of trouble. And as he says at the end of verse number 5, see how great a forest a little fire kindles. And that's another metaphor. These great forest fires are often started by a very small fire. And then he says in verse 6, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell. I suppose there isn't anyone listening to this program today who hasn't made a grievous error with their tongue. Now, whether or not you have recognized that is a whole other matter, but I am almost certain that all of us have committed a great error with our tongue, and we know exactly what James means. It is a fire. This little spark, a little word, a little phrase, said with the wrong intent, said in the wrong tone of voice, said with the wrong choice of words, can drastically alter the course of our life. We see famous figures on television or radio make an error with one statement, and they lose their job. And James says the stakes are even higher. Our very salvation hangs in the balance. You know, Jesus once warned the Pharisees and the scribes, be careful what you say. They had accused Jesus of casting out demons by the power of Satan. And Jesus warns them, for every idle word that you speak, you will be brought into judgment. God is keeping track of what we say, how we say it, the intent that's behind those words. He's keeping track of those things. And our very salvation hangs in the balance. For every kind of beast, James says in verse number 7, and bird, of reptile, and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. You know, earlier I said we all have a weapon at our disposal, a weapon that can be used against people. It's not an atomic bomb, it's not a gun, it's not a knife, it's our tongue. How often do we wound people with our words? How often do we inflict harm on people with our words? You can tame all sorts of creatures across the world, but it's a rare thing to find a person who can tame the tongue. As we draw this week's lesson to a close, your neighbors at the Rock Creek Church of Christ want you to know that faith in Jesus Christ saves our souls. God has always valued faith above all other things. From Noah to Abraham to Rahab to David, we see examples of God favoring people who believe in Him. This is why God chose to save those who believe in His Son, Jesus Christ. Whoever believes in Him will not perish but have eternal life. If you believe in Jesus Christ but you're not sure what to do next, please visit us at the Rock Creek Church of Christ in Ottawa, Kansas. Our church building sits 2 miles south of Walmart on Highway 59. We meet at 10 a.m. on Sundays for a Bible study, 11 a.m. for worship, and then again at 1:45 p.m. for a Bible study. We also meet on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Please join us as we worship God, encourage one another, and learn more about God's will for our lives.